Hi, this is Kevin Clark. I'm chief correspondent for America Magazine, and I'm visiting today with Father Brian Massengale, who is an incoming professor of theology at Fordham University. He's the former president of the Catholic Theological Society of America and the Black Catholic Theological Symposium. Professor Massengale, here we are again. It seems like this is a horrible revisiting of previous suffering we've had. There's been two shooting incidents, also captured on video for the world to see. To layman's eyes, apparent excessive use of force. What are we supposed to make of these incidents? What was your gut reaction to seeing these videos?
Well, it's interesting we're having this conversation just after I watched on CNN just an hour ago the entire 15-minute clip of, I think, with the situation in Minnesota, the girlfriend, fiance of the man who was killed, posted in live time on Facebook a video of the aftermath of the shooting. And the 15 minutes of that are, it's just gut-wrenching. Mm-hmm. And when I first heard about it, I was sad and outraged. And now I can't even describe the feeling. I guess it's a soul weariness that I think what most confounds me is that as a nation, we cannot personalize these deaths, that we somehow see them as abstractions or statistics or worse as the embodiment of our worst fears, rather than as human beings, as someone's father, someone's mother, someone's fiance, someone's loved one. And what we've done is we've made these black bodies into abstractions, into, as I often say, I think sometimes as black people in America, we're walking ink blots, we're walking Rorschach tests, mm-hmm. upon which the majority project their fears and anxieties. And yes, here we are again, because we as a nation refuse to learn. We see each of these as isolated incidents, rather than saying, this is not a Minnesota problem, this is not a Baton Rouge problem, this is not a Staten Island problem, this is not a Cleveland problem, this is not a Ferguson problem, this is now a national problem. And until we start looking at this and saying there is something systemic wrong here, this is not a matter of looking at the individual intents of individual police officers. We now have to look at training and police culture. And what is it about police training and police culture that leads to these outcomes? And why does this happen to African-American men and women, but predominantly young black men, in ways that it doesn't happen with other racial groups? Mm-hmm. It just simply doesn't.
Now, there are some people who would challenge that statement, but do you feel like there's been enough research done to amply demonstrate that this is not just a question of sort of the Twittersphere perspective or the Facebook perspective or the fact that so much of this is captured now on cell phones and put out there, that there is enough statistical evidence to suggest that this is not just a matter of a simple angle or perception?
I don't think there's anyone that really can doubt that. Let's look at the situation. I just want to talk about the conversations that are going on in the African-American community. So you can have someone walk into a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado, who's obviously heavily weaponized. Mm-hmm. And yet he's, detained, arrested. He lives to go through the judicial process, which is where these things should be adjudicated. You have someone walking into a church just last year, again, heavily weaponized, and yet he's living to go through the judicial process. Here, in the last two incidences now, in Baton Rouge and just outside of St. Paul, Minnesota, you have two men who are pulled over for very routine kinds of offenses, who inform the officers that they are legally carrying, their weapons, they are, exercising their Second Amendment rights, And yet we have very different outcomes. We simply do not have, and I'm not saying that white people aren't shot by cops, of course they are, mm-hmm. but never in these kinds of circumstances. And white people have very different encounters with the criminal justice system than African Americans. This is beyond dispute. And the fact that it is disputed says something about what racism and race has done to our nation. It's become, I call it a spiritual cataract. It's distorted our vision so that we're unable to see what is there in plain and obvious for everyone, but we can't see it or we refuse to see it. And I do think that there's something about that. There's a, you know, I'm reminded, because we're talking as Catholics to each other, I'm reminded of Jesus in his parable of the cure of the man born blind in the Gospel of John. And at the very end, the Pharisees are saying, "You're not calling us blind." And Jesus responds, if you were blind, there'd be no fault in that. But we see, you say, and therefore your sin remains. And I think that's what racism has become in our country. It's become this spiritual cataract that makes us blind to what everyone knows and what's out there for everyone to see. And the empirical evidence has been done, but we refuse to see.
Yeah. Well, I spoke today with two representatives from the National Association of Black Police Officers, and their take on it, I mean, I went to them, frankly, because I thought if anyone had insight into this situation, it would be African-American officers, you know, who've had, I guess essentially can look at the situation from both sides. And both of the officers I spoke to did express the concern that we not jump to conclusions based on this video or these video snippets that we see. Now, how do you respond to that position?
Well, I think that there are two different issues here. One is no one disputes the fact that there are police officers who are out there who are doing heroic work and who are fulfilling their responsibility and their solemn duty to protect and to serve. No one is disputing that. And so I want to be upfront about that. And of course, we're at the very beginning of these stages, and so of course there needs to be a legal process that needs to go on. My point is that, again, we can't look at these as isolated incidences. We have to look at the entire picture here. And when you look at the entire picture, there is a disturbing pattern that's here. And I think after every one of these occurrences, we want to say, well, let's let the whole process play out. And so we look at everything and as if it were an isolated jigsaw puzzle piece, instead of looking at the entire jigsaw puzzle. Here you have police. We know that, for example, police departments such as Cleveland and Chicago have been under Justice Department reviews where they have found systemic abuses that are racially motivated or racial bias. So again, we need to broaden our focus and not look at each isolated picture, but to look at the entirety of what we see before us.
Yeah.
The entirety of what we see before us. And that's what we as a nation are unwilling to do. I mean, it's something that back in 2013, in the aftermath of the Trayvon Martin acquittal, I wrote an article entitled, "When Profiling is Reasonable, Injustice Becomes Excusable."
Mm-hmm.
And I think what we have to look at is that communities of color are policed in ways that other communities are not. And it's not because there aren't crimes that are being committed there, but they're handled differently at every stage of the process. And this is something that no one seriously disputes.
Yeah. So in other words, if I get pulled over in my northern Westchester suburb, I can't anticipate that my taillight being out is not going to be a life-threatening situation.
Well, exactly. Or to put it another way, I'm presently giving this interview at Marquette University, where I'm, on my way to Fordham, and no one disputes the fact that college kids use drugs.
Yeah.
However,
I heard that rumor.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
However, college campuses are not policed to the same degree as other communities would be.
Yeah.
People wouldn't tolerate that kind of policing. And so as a result, you don't see, Marquette kids, or I suspect you don't see Fordham kids in the criminal court system going through being busted for drug-related offenses.
Yeah.
And so the public face of drug abuse becomes overwhelmingly black and brown, even though statistically every statistical study shows that, racial ethnic communities abuse or use drugs at the same rates. There's no racial ethnic difference between the drug use, but there is in drug enforcement and prosecution.
Yeah. I have to say, when I was watching both videos, I didn't watch the entire video of the shooting incident in near St. Paul, but I did watch both videos, what was available online this morning. And I mean, my initial reaction to both was just sheer horror and sadness at what I was seeing, two lives snuffed out like this. But I have to admit, there's a part of me, I feel like sometimes the same reaction that, maybe an African-American person hearing about a criminal incident might say, oh my God, I hope it's not a black kid, or a Muslim might say, oh, I hope it wasn't a Muslim who did that. I felt myself feeling a sense of, gee, I hope this is justified somehow, or I hope we can find some way to excuse the police. And I'm not even sure, is that an expression of my innate, innate racism, or just desire that authority be, dependable and credible, and that my faith in a law enforcement is justified. I mean, it's a complex feeling to have.
Mm-hmm.
And I come from a background of cops and firemen. I'm all civil servants in my family here in New York, all cops mm-hmm. and firemen. So it is with a lot of mixed emotions that I my perspective on these things is generated.
Mm-hmm. And I think what we need to do, I'm glad you brought that up. I think it's akin, if I can draw a parallel, that maybe you and I would appreciate. Back in the worst days, where all the revelations of sexual abuse of minors by priests was, almost daily fodder in papers.
Yeah.
And you got to the point of wishing that, hoping that someone somewhere would be exonerated, that we had a story of some courageous bishop who have taken action, who didn't, contribute to the cover up and things like that. I think it's a very normal reaction to want to, circle the wagons, to want to expect the best out of those whom we love and out of institutions that we depend upon. But I also think that as citizens, as believers, as people who seek the truth, eventually that instinct has to surrender to the weight of the evidence, or to what we in the Catholic Church would say, a solidarity with victims, and say, there is something that's not good going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And just as priests had to come to a situation of a realization of saying, for the good of the presbyterate, for the good of ordained ministry, we can't just circle the wagons. We have to admit there is a problem here, and it's not just a problem of these individual abusers. There's a systemic problem here. And until we could get to that point, we couldn't really reach the point of doing a more adequate job of handling this horrible scourge. And I say more adequate because I don't want to suggest for a moment that if what we're doing is near what should be done, but at least we're not where we were before. And we couldn't get there until we were able to somehow, move beyond the initial instinct of trusting the institution that we've given our lives to, and summon the courage or summon the moral fortitude to say, there's a problem here, and it's a serious one. And I think even for, and I think that's also your instincts of one that, as I've often wondered why it is especially that Catholics seem to have a problem with addressing issues of police violence against African Americans. And I think it's because in many ways Catholics tend to be more familiar with police officers or with civil servants. I mean, in many communities, the police Catholics are overrepresented in police forces, given their numbers in the population. And so we think police, Catholic, others not Catholic, especially African Americans. And I think that's understandable, as I said, kind of tribal, affiliation or love or concern. But we can't get anywhere until we finally do have the insight and that the moral fortitude to look at this and to say there really is a deep systemic problem here.
Yeah.
And for the good of my loved ones, for the good of those I care about, we have to summon the strength to finally address it.
Do you think, commenting on that overrepresentation of Catholics, I grew up in New York, and yeah, I can tell you, the Italian-Irish contribution to the New York Police Department is pretty significant. Does the church have a special obligation then to try and confront this issue? Do they have, because of that possible connection, do they have an obligation to exploit that and better put it to better use? And if we're not doing it, why aren't we doing it?
Those are really good questions. Yes, I think that this gives the Catholic Church not only an opportunity, but I think an obligation to use its connection to appeal to the better angels that are present in the police departments. I mean, after any one of these shootings or any one of these incidents, we see a predictable litany of how this unfolds. We'll see police officers come forward saying that this is not all police officers, we have a difficult job, and with the rally behind the police officers. And I just want to say, yes, police officers do a valuable service. And when I'm in trouble, yes, I want to depend upon them. But I think the church has an obligation then to say, yes, and because you are doing something that is noble, that is truly a vocation, then we also have an obligation to root out and address any problems that get in the way of people perceiving there being a credibility or a problem of trust. And I think that this isn't any profession. Those who are in the profession, we know what the bad apples are. We know what the problems are. I think that as a church, then, we can use the entree that we have to appeal to, as I said, the better nature of those who enter the profession with, full of noble ideals, and to nurture those ideals and to use those ideals to move us to a better place. But the other thing I want to just say in relation to this too is that this is not simply a matter of police culture and police training. That's true. But it exists within a wider context of racial division and racial understandings and misunderstandings and injustice. And in that sense, the police are reflections of systemic problems. They're not aberrations from the American norm. And so I don't want to make police officers the scapegoat for, broader social patterns and issues.
That sounds like a lot of work, what you're proposing.
I don't mean to be glib. Yes, it is a lot of work, because I think what we're seeing here is not unique. This is not, in other words, this is where I wish we had done we'd do a better job of teaching American history, because in point of fact, injustices in the administration of criminal justice regarding specifically African Americans are not new. They're as old as 1954 and even beyond. Mm-hmm. I teach a class at Marquette University, and hopefully we'll at Fordham, called Malcolm, Martin, Baldwin in the Church. So dealing with Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, and James Baldwin, and then how the Catholic Church responded to the concerns that these gentlemen raised during their lives. And it was interesting. After one student this year wrote a reflection paper and said, literally began saying, OMG, exclamation point. Before taking this course, I thought Black Lives Matter was something that happened just last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Going through this course, I realized that the injustices that African Americans experience in the criminal justice system are longstanding and were issues of concern even for Martin Luther King. And I never wrote a paper, yes, and even before that. And so what we're seeing here is not something that's unprecedented. And I think that's something that that's why it's a lot of work, is because we keep kicking the can down the road. What we do, we settle for episodic small improvements rather than looking at the deeper issues. We're like lopping off the top of the weed rather than going down into the root.
Yeah, because no amount of better training, well, maybe better training, I don't want to suggest that that's not useful, but I'm thinking, watching that video of the man being shot in near St. Paul,
mm-hmm.
the fear of the officer who fired the shots that killed him is fairly, I think it's fair to say, is palpable.
Yes.
And you can almost hear already a note of regret in what he's kind of loudly trying to justify what he just did. I told him not to. As if he's already sensed I've done something really terribly wrong here. And that's that fear comes from some place that's a lot deeper than any training is going to touch.
Exactly. The way I put this, and this is going to sound a little provocative, but I think I do mean it. The deepest thing is that blackness has become weaponized. In other words, the black body becomes seen as a weapon, to the point where police officers, and again, many whites, and so I'm not going to indict police officers alone, but in this case, police officers will perceive danger and threat in situations involving African Americans that they would not necessarily experience when dealing with whites. And that becomes the deepest issue here, because, again, when we prosecute these things, the standard becomes, did the officer have legitimate fear? Did the officer fear for his life? And in that kind of standard, yes, he did in this situation. But the question becomes, why is there fear in this situation where there's not fear in situations involving people of other racial ethnic groups? And again, when we looked at the Ferguson grand jury, one of the grand jurors sent back an inquiry and said, well, couldn't Michael Brown's body be seen as a weapon given its size? And you're like, what? So again, the embodiment, black bodies become seen as weapons or sources of threat or danger. And that points to, like you said, the deepest issue that needs to be looked at, this visceral fear of the other, which has been engendered in us for a long, long time in this country. Now, there are ways of getting around that, but first you have to be conscious of what's going on in your mind and in your soul unconsciously so you can override that kind of cultural default fear that's instilled in us.
Yeah. So it sounds like as a nation and as individuals, and not just as police officers, we have a lot of practical work to do, and we have a lot of soul work to do to address this problem.
Exactly. A lot of soul work, because there are many ways to understand racism. We can understand it as a sociological phenomenon, as a political issue, and we're going to see a lot of that over the next few days, I'm sure. But to my mind, at its deepest level, racism is a soul sickness. It's a profound warping of the human spirit. And so you were saying before that, you know, better police training, body cameras, all these things are important. But to my mind, they're going to be limited and even ineffective if we don't address these issues as soul issues. And that should be what, you know, religious faith and Catholic faith is all about. That there are policy issues and policy matters that need to be dealt with, yes. But we're going to keep circling back to this issue unless we confront it at its deepest level. And to say that there is a soul sickness that is, you know, that's present in our nation and in our society. And until we have the willingness to address it, and not just to address it rationally, but to address it using the best resources of symbol and ritual, we won't be able to really deal with or get ourselves out of this destructive feedback loop that we're caught in.
Okay, thank you so much, Father Massengill. A lot for us to ponder, let's keep the family of the deceased and those people who witnessed these terrible incidents in our prayers this weekend.
And let's keep the police officers who, you know, I'm sure this is not an easy thing for them to deal with. But let's, you know, and let's keep our nation in prayer too, that that one day soon we will, you know, have a deeper, more productive conversation on these horrible issues that we seem to be confronted with on a pretty regular basis and a pretty disturbingly regular basis.
I've been speaking with Father Brian Massengill, who will be teaching theology this fall at Fordham University in the beautiful Bronx, New York. Thank you, Father Massengill.
Okay, thank you.